Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adatula.
Day game is doing day game things right now. Still
1-0 sure
in favor of the Astros right now. They're in the bottom of the fourth, just to give you an update there. All right, let's jump back into it. The Nick Caserio pre-NFL draft press conference. We played that. We had that on the air earlier. And yes, actually, shout out to Brandon Hallam on the YouTube. Reminded me of something that I've wanted to mention multiple times over the last like hour plus.
Mm-hmm.
The Texans have a visit with Donovan Jackson, who is the offensive lineman out of Ohio State. Shout out Figgy. What's interesting though Donovan Jackson, I tried to make his name into just one, just squish them together. He is viewed as a guard, except mm-hmm. in looking at Dane Brugler, who works for The Athletic, puts together one of my favorite draft guides
mm-hmm.
in all of the land. He has him listed as a tackle, specifically tackle number 6. And I was like, huh. So he does have, obviously he has that versatility, but yeah. I do wonder if that could be something that's interesting. But yeah, another potential first round, maybe early second round player, offensive lineman in particular, that the Texans have some level of interest with. And I do believe that they have some level of interest with, because he's obviously coming in for a 30 visit. Although with different teams, 30 visits do different things, mm-hmm. right? Maybe some teams use 30 visits to, you know, get an opportunity to just circle back around on a player. Maybe I saw somebody talk about the possibility of using a 30 visit just to talk to players or teammates of players that they're
about other players.
Or what
yeah,
have
that
you,
happens
right?
sometimes.
Well, Nick Caserio in his pre-draft presser, one of the things he was talking about was 30 visits and just how, you know, they utilize it. And I think he was kind of talking about wide receivers, but just obviously very widely to get an idea of what these players, how they've been asked to be used in mm-hmm. some ways, in other circumstances, get a better idea of what they've been asked to do, and then see how that would fit with what they would want to ask them to do, the Texans, that is. And that makes it feel like anybody that they're bringing in for a 30 visit very much feels like somebody that they'd be interested in utilizing and probably would jump onto their board, assuming that they fit the criteria of the makeup personally, the interpersonal type things that they want from any player.
I think that, you know, that can be the case for any team that has a, you know, player in for a top 30 visit. But I think with the Texans, you almost give it a little more credence because Nick is on the record, in fact, on these airwaves with Sean and Seth, talking about, you know, he doesn't really care about the combine and really the pro days. He's more there just for particular things. He cares about interviews.
He
cares about talking with the guy.
Yeah.
And so I think it resonates a little more with him.
Yep. So what else jumped out to you in the 40 minutes of Nick Caserio? There's a lot of different places, and I just want to hit the things that you found interesting, the things that jumped out to you during the course of it.
Yeah, look, there was a lot, and I think the thing that really led to some nuggets, you know, being out there from Nick Caserio, he, from the very start, just sounded loose and confident. You know, he just sounded not like the Nick Caserio we often have heard, you know, in the last few years. But I think he was a little not gonna give away anything, but maybe you can read between the lines, which is what we probably should do here. And the several different times in different instances, he said, we have four picks in the top 89 right now.
Right now.
Then he said, right now, we're scheduled for number 25. Then later, again, he says, right now, we don't have a fourth pick. Now, look.
Wherever we pick.
Yeah.
Wherever we pick next. Mm-hmm. Which
That's the fourth time he referenced it. He said, yes. We're going to get a good player at 25 or wherever we do pick. That doesn't necessarily mean they could move back. It means they could move up.
And that it does. He did say wherever we pick next,
yeah,
or after,
and then he added, or wherever we do pick,
which yeah. then would open back up yeah. the possibility of trading up. But like he made it, I mean, he yeah. played with the language to the point where it made it very clear that Nick knows what we know about him, and yeah. he's like, no, that's all in play, all yeah. of it's in play, baby. The Nick wheeling, dealing, trading up, down, all left, right. All of that is in play yeah. with what they've got going here.
Yeah, so that was one that stood out. Something that stood out that I've never, ever heard a general manager say, and I'm sure it's true. You know, it sounded like there's no reason to be, you know, vague about this. He said their board is smaller than most teams.
I did hear that.
And I'm like, I don't know what to do with that. You know, maybe it's just it's always been smaller. You know, they refine the number of players that they like, and then after that, they, you know, they have the other players. But like, when he said the board is smaller than most teams, I think he meant the board of players. Again, interpretation here, people. I think the board of players that they really like.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you know, like because everybody has big boards. He says ours is smaller than most teams, and I think that means they're focused in on a certain number of players. After that, it's kind of a crapshoot anyway.
Well, no, I think what happens is when any team goes to the draft, they build their board, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you'll see the big boards that various different outlets would have. Mm-hmm. Individual teams build their board. This is what we're going to go off of. We stack these names.
But sometimes it goes deep.
And they build a board that is accordingly for all of those things. And I do wonder if it is shallow or if it is smaller because of the back end, as it seems like you're maybe intimating. Or if it's smaller because of the additional parameters that they seem to set on players in order to be here. Like, if you want to be here. Because he did say it's not about talent. It's about, you know, putting together a team. And I do wonder if it's like, hey, talent is fine. But if you do not also fit the metrics of Swarm, right? If you don't have the personality traits that we need in this building, that's another thing. And then if you don't have whatever other parameters that they are going to place on a player, they're willing to take a guy off the board. Remember, there was maybe a few weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, we were talking about Josh Simmons. I do think that he's a type of player. If you are to believe, or if they have the similar intel as to what one of the kind of draft scouts was putting out there, or one of these you know, kind of anonymous scouting, you know, nuggets when it came to questions of maturity when it comes to Josh Simmons, right? If that's something where that the Texans can substantiate and have a similar kind of reporting on, that seems like if you have a smaller board that the Texans are like, hey, we'll take that guy off the board. He is talented. However, he doesn't fit what we're looking for, and we'll keep it in these veins. And I do wonder if that is going to be telling in the way that they go about drafting.
Yeah. So those are the first two things, you know, the picks right now and wherever we do pick, and then the board being smaller. And then I thought I found it very interesting when he was asked specifically about wide receiver, like mentioned, they mentioned the name wide receiver. They mentioned the position wide receiver in the question. He never even mentioned a wide receiver. He said, we think we have a good football team right now. But the question was about the position.
How do you feel about the wide receiver room? To which he basically was said,
no, his first thing out of his mouth, we think we have a good football team.
Good.
Right now.
Goal is to add good players.
Nothing about receivers. Now, again,
and what's the role? How are you going to use them? Were the big things that I took from that response?
Yes, but it was specific to the wide receiver room, and he's like, you know, we got good players. So again, what do you do with that? I don't know, but
right, because it feels like you can go one of two ways. Yeah, that either he's trying to I've used that word three times a day, and it's kind of it's fun. Obfuscate what's happening. If he's trying to like kind of hide his hand in some ways,
something. That's how I would read it.
Or you could go the other way, where he has said it. They feel good about this wide receiver room, right? Mm-hmm. And yes, it is lying season, it's smoke season, all of that. But they do have two very good wide receivers if you talk about Nico Collins and Christian Kirk. Is it possible that they look at this and they go, hey, not all teams have three really good wide receivers on the front end that they go and they, you know, attack a game with. Yeah. Is it cool having two great wide receivers and then some guys that you feel are capable of filtering in, understanding that your priorities are probably not just go out there and five-headed monster like was what was the conversation last year? And also, I mean, they've talked in the 30 visits and those types of things with wide receivers, right? The likes of Savion Williams, mm-hmm. Kyle Williams. Like, we've talked about some of those guys that they've met and talked with. But maybe those kind of illustrate the idea that it's, again, not as much of a priority, the specific of that wide receiver and where you get them. But again, the idea of quote-unquote good players.
And nobody knows what he's really good at kind of keeping things close to the vest, literally, his vest.
Was he wearing a vest? I think he was wearing a nice button-up.
He didn't have a vest on today.
Yeah, but you get my point. He's really good at it, but I'm going to call complete BS on that. I go back to what I said yesterday. He knows what we all know. They don't even have a third starting wide receiver right now. Like that's the only place in the 22 positions that you can.
Wow, the Braxton Berrios ratio.
Yes. yes.
By the way, he was at Coachella.
Yes, he was wearing that. Oh, that's
right.
That's right.
The first thing that came to my mind, who paid for this trip?
Yeah, exactly.
But she did.
She 100%.
He might tag along. I think the better question is who wanted this trip, and that is absolutely
her.
That is
what was her name
her.
Again?
Alex.
Alex something.
Yeah. Ooh, I feel bad. My bad, Alex. Yeah. I don't remember your last name. Alex Earl.
Alex Earl. Earl. But my point is, like, you can actually point to a starter in 21 out of the 22 positions on offense and defense. He knows that. And then he doesn't even mention receivers. I think he's just playing that game about what they're really going to be looking for.
All right. So one thing that I feel like you have to mention. Because the assembled media did their due diligence on trying to get to some answers on the offensive line and their objective mm-hmm. And the way that they've gone about it in this offseason. Because it's been a little while since we've had an opportunity as an assembled media to ask questions mm-hmm. about this. And you could see, one thing I would love to do is get like his immediate reaction, the first few words out of his mouth mm-hmm. after each of the instances. I think there was three if memory serves, but there might have been one more. Because he got progressively more frustrated with the assertion of the questions being about, do you change the process when it comes to the offensive line evaluation year over year, considering the mm-hmm. know, the results, the cost benefit of what you're utilizing the offensive line? Like, what are you trying to do with the offensive line? And he got, was that
the F-bomb.
What brought him to an F-bomb? Yes, yeah. It was. Like, that is really interesting to me that he is so insanely frustrated about mm-hmm. The way that they go about offensive line. In fact, that took him to the place where he's like, offense or drafting is 50-50. How much do you?
Which, by the way,
well, I guess there you go. that's the question. Is like, what do you mean? What do you take of that assertion? What do you take of the offense or the offensive line and how they're putting this thing together?
Drafting is not 50-50. There are teams that have a lot better than a 50% hit rate on their last four drafts, five drafts, whatever, and some that don't, you know. And so the numbers, you know, he's a smart guy, tell you it's not 50-50. You know, if you are really good at evaluating, you have a really good success rate. If you're not, you don't. And I think he's getting and understandably so. I mean, anybody who, you know, who does this for a living and people start to sort of ask questions in a roundabout way of saying, hey, you're not good at this,
yeah.
Which is what they were doing and which is what we've talked about.
Sure.
You know, you have to kind of start questioning or looking at how he evaluates offensive line time. It's out there. People know it. They were asking about it in a roundabout way. So he got a little defensive. I get it. But it's not to say it's 50-50.
Yeah, I think he was using that as a shorthand for this is not an exact science, one. And then two, like, obviously, nobody's hitting 1,000. It's basically the
I guess, well,
quote that would be similar mm-hmm. In thought process. But I did find it interesting that, you know, again, talking about, like, you know, the approach to the offensive line, he kept that same general talking point, which is we're just trying to acquire good players, which, and then also, again, yeah, well, we basically look at all of our processes and as if to say the offensive line approach mm-hmm. in how they acquire talent doesn't differ and how they acquire and assemble talent, I should also add, is not differed from anything else when it comes to acquiring and assembling talent. How does that make you feel about this a week from tomorrow when they're going into the draft and ostensibly, or in theory, they're going to add offensive linemen
well, they
to
will,
this
yeah.
offense.
It ain't great because one of the other things he said is, you know, we look at everything, but they had he has confidence in sort of the people in place and the system in place for evaluating, you know, all players, you know, especially offensive linemen. He just has to hit. I mean, he can't miss on this offensive line pick wherever it might be.
I'd be lying if I told you that I was not somewhat concerned with the way that he responded, and I understand why he would respond this way. This is not to say that I don't understand it, but
right, that's what I get it.
And I guess he has not outright said we are not changing our process, but he was trying to, again, couch
kinda
it in the idea.
Yeah.
It's not above what the changes of the processes that you would do otherwise, mm-hmm. but it still comes back to the idea of, all right, if it's going to be somewhat similar, which, again, you have not entirely wiped out, I can only work off of what I've seen, which is that, yes, you've acquired talent, you've invested a lot of investment, mm-hmm. a lot of capital into these spaces, and ultimately the output has not been strong enough.
Right.
And so we're trusting you. Like, we have no other choice to trust you to get it right.
And we have confidence in
you.
But that is an actual real thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just look at the drafts.
Yeah. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Shout out to Aaron Wilson, who, again, also reported earlier today. Kenneth Grant came in mm-hmm. for a visit with the Texans as well. So, like, that's another one. And Kenneth Grant is an interesting one because that's a defensive tackle mm-hmm. that you could possibly get. You would have to get at 25 or trade up for.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like I've seen him get down to 25 ever, like hardly mm-hmm. ever in mock drafts. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that they're looking under that stone, but
or wherever we draft.
They are looking under a lot mm-hmm. of stones, and that's but yeah, the or wherever you draft is interesting, but then that also feels like that might run a little counter to the idea of a small board considering how far or how yes. wide of a net they're casting. Yes. I don't know. It'll be interesting the next week or so, and obviously the actual draft dates once we get to mm-hmm. April 24th through the 26th. The 2025 NFL draft. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. This is about the time where we turn it over to Figgy Fig for Figgy's mixtape. What you got for us?
Yeah, so we 8 days away from the NFL draft. The one question I want to ask is, how will Roger Goodell announce Travis Hunter?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what position is he going to say?
Well, Travis Hunter
is going
to
say one, both. Mm-hmm. And plus, LeBron's PR team is working overtime, man. It's pathetic.
Okay. We'll get into that next.
Pass the aux cord and crank up the volume. Figgy Fig's in the driver's seat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. It's time for Figgy's Mixtape on Sports Radio 610.
Yep, it's the mixtape in the loop. Sports Radio 610. Figgy Fig holding it down on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday to everyone out there. And I got to give a special shout out. Or you know what? We got to give a special shout out to the Houston Rockets, man. Not only are they in the playoffs, but man, we facing them Golden State Warriors, man.
Yes, sir.
And we geared up, man. I'm ready to hit the court, man.
Look at that.
What you got? What you got? Tell the people what you got.
Number 25 in your program.
We're all number 25.
Oh, you got
the 2025.
Oh, you got the Brook Lopez.
Yeah,
I got
a Brook John Lopez. P. Lopez. Nice. I got a John P. Not Brook, not Robin. John
ain't,
P. Lopez.
Ain't no attitude in the league.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because yeah. I feel like if it was an attitude in the league, it'd have been me.
It's pretty sweet stuff, man.
Yeah, nah, this
Shout
is legit.
Shout out to the
man.
Rockets.
And look, I think my favorite part is they got my government.
Government
on it. Hey, are you happier with your government or Figgy Fig on the back?
I like Figgy Fig, but, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not pissed off at my last name.
That's right. You're not embarrassed.
I think my pops would probably be super happy about this one. Yeah. My pops and rest in peace to my grandfather.
Oh, yeah. He played for the Celtics. Uncle.
No. That's on the other side of the family.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, man, I like that they put my last name mm-hmm. on there, man. So.
Don't take that with you if you go to Cleveland, though. They might take it off you.
Oh, word.
say my name. Let me hold on to this, young
Yeah, fella. Yeah. But shout out to the Rockets, man. I'm really pumped up for this playoff game, man.
Yeah.
I think I didn't want to face the Warriors. I'd rather face Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's more exciting. It's going to be more fun.
The Warriors here, man. Yeah, nah. I think the Rockets probably juiced up about facing the Warriors, too.
For sure.
Man.
Yeah, ask Tari Eason. Tari Eason don't say he don't like the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Steven Adams has a good reason to dislike at least one of the Warriors. Dylan Brooks.
Yeah, you think?
Dylan Brooks don't like nobody, I don't think, to be completely honest. Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to watch the movie now, The Warriors.
Warriors.
Yeah.
We don't need to do that again.
Come out to play.
That was a cause of controversy. Was that last year? So, yeah, we don't need to do that one again.
Yeah. All right, so it's Figgy's mixtape in the Loop Sports Radio 610, and we are 8 days away from the NFL draft. It kind of don't feel like it. I feel like it just popped up. But
the way we've been talking about the draft all this time,
I felt like we've been talking.
Can you believe?
I feel like we've been talking about it a little bit, but I think maybe because it's the 25th pick and it's so far away, where we just kind of like,
yeah.
Because maybe the last couple years have been more,
yeah,
because it's higher picks and all that stuff. But
when you have the number 2 overall pick, I have a feeling it feels just a little bit different.
Yeah,
when 25 sitting right there.
Yeah, and speaking of the number 2 overall pick, the Cleveland Browns got that pick,
correct?
And it looked like it's going towards Travis Hunter. Now, some things could change, but I think they're probably gonna go with Travis Hunter. And I wonder what Roger Goodell going to do here, because usually when he announced the pick, he said in the 2025 NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select Travis Hunter, wide receiver, Colorado. Is he going to say both of the positions he play?
Well, let Travis Hunter tell it. He wants him to say both of them. In fact, I mean, this isn't about saying the positions. This is about letting him play it. And maybe this shows up tomorrow. I don't know if you remember. Do you know what I'm about to say?
What's that?
That he told CBS Sports last week that he would consider walking away if the team didn't let him do both of them. Like, so he's dead serious about people taking serious his ability to play both. And he can. Like, he is a blue chip prospect on both sides of that. Like, this isn't one of those, well, he does both of that and that's what makes him a no.
He doesn't dabble.
If he was a blue if he was a just a cornerback, he'd be a first round cornerback. And if he was just a wide receiver, he'd be a first round wide receiver in the same way that he is in both of those places. And so, yeah, man, it feels like you gotta do that. And I mean, come on, Raj.
I feel like they are. This is just like this is fluff. Roger Goodell's not coaching him. You know, if he wants to, I think he's gonna default to, hey, what do you want me to say? If you want me to say both, I'll say both.
I think so, too. Yeah. And here's Travis Hunter pretty much saying he wants Roger Goodell to say both of the positions.
What position do you want to hear the commissioner say when he says Travis Hunter?
He better say wide receiver and DB. Got you.
So just wide receiver, DB, not athlete?
No, I need him to say wide receiver and DB.
Yeah,
I would like to hear it, man.
I would, too.
I don't think it was ever done before. Because he ain't the first person that played both sides.
Well, he would be the first person to play both sides in the way that he's trying to.
Yeah, but I'm talking about in college that play, because you had like Chris Gamble that played both sides, but he went into the draft as a cornerback.
Right. Even Deion.
Yeah.
And even Deion.
Deion was a defensive back and then had some wide receiver. Like this is in a way historic, even though we have seen players capable of doing it. I don't think that we've had the player empowerment or what have you for a player to actually be able to force is not the right word, but it's the best one that comes to mind in this moment. Force a team to really have to consider doing this. And so, yeah, man, this is kind of wild that he's in that place.
I actually don't think it's that big a deal, and I don't think it's that big of an issue for Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell, at its core in this event, he's an MC.
Yeah.
He's an MC. And if I were, you know, every time I MC and introduce someone, I'm like, how would you like for me to introduce you?
That's right.
You know?
Because in this instance, it's really not about Raj, and I think he understands that to some degree. It's about all these dudes.
Right.
And that's what, like, their stories are the event. That's what makes this the event that they've been able to sell, is the stories and the beginning of careers of these dudes, at least as a professional or in the National Football League, because, I mean, they're basically professionals now anyway.
Yeah.
But, I think he understands that. So I have a strong feeling that he'll go ahead and say both wide receiver, defensive back. Now, how much of it does it then come down to, does it matter which one he says first?
No, I don't think it matters.
I don't think that matters. I think if we had to place a bet, I think he's going to say receiver and then defensive back first.
And someone from the 832, how does his position affect his contract? Well, wide receivers seem to be making more on the high end than cornerbacks. So, I mean, but that's years down the road, and depending on how this works. And if he can actually do this for an extended period of time of playing both ways, but it don't matter which position because he will get paid all of the money somehow, some way.
Yep. It's a mixtape in the loop. So Rich Paul, who's a super Asian. We all know.
You mean Adele's boyfriend?
Yeah, I forgot he's that too. Yeah.
That's such a wild thing.
Isn't
like,
that
he,
weird?
He is the winningest of win. Like, is it weird to say that I think Rich Paul has benefited more than anybody in that general like LeBron story, even considering LeBron, or am I doing too much in that moment?
I mean, he's got a...
I think so.
I don't think that's crazy. I'll put it that way. It ain't crazy.
Especially where he started. Like,
because he wasn't... Nobody knew who he was.
A dude from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Over on St. Clair, just the way he started. And now Adele is on my right hand, right arm.
Yeah. Super agent.
Super agent. He dipping into everything. NBA, he dipping into all over sports.
Media. All that.
Media. So, yeah, no, I don't think that's far-fetched. But let me see if this is far-fetched. Mm-hmm. So he was on the Pat McAfee show, and he had this to say about the whole Big Three thing, and was Miami a Big Three?
People talk Big Three, but, you know, the Big Three thing has never really worked. And you say, well, what happened in Miami? That wasn't really a Big Three. There was three guys that went in the lottery, and they did really well individually on their team, so they put up big numbers and had big accomplishments. But when you think about it, Bosh was the ultimate professional. He took a back seat and he played a role in which, because he had such a high IQ and he was such a professional as an individual, his approach to everything is what made that work.
I take back everything nice I said about Rich Paul.
Wow.
By the way, he said, well, that wasn't really a Big Three. And then he went on to explain in detail why they were a Big Three. Well, they were all really, really good players, top picks. They had great careers. All, you know, he basically said, you know, they were the best player on their team. And then they came together. That's a Big Three. That's a Big Three.
See, I feel like he was kind of right and very wrong on this, because I think the part he was right on was Bosh did have to take a back seat, which means, you know, it was a good two. It was LeBron and D-Wade, and unfortunately Chris Bosh had to take that back seat, because I mean, you ain't scoring no 200 points. Somebody's gonna have to take a decline. But I still feel like that was the Big Three. Bosh was the Big Three. He was just the one that was affected the most. I just don't. I felt like he's trying to clean this up so LeBron won't look as bad.
Protect the bell cow.
Yeah, by saying
protect the bell cow.
Because when you talk about LeBron, you always bring up, oh, the Big Three in Miami, the Big Three in Miami. It seemed like he's trying to say, well, actually, it wasn't a Big Three. And Chris Bosh was a dog, man.
24 and 11.
Hall of Famer.
The season before he went to Miami.
He was a dog, man.
Five straight All-Stars in those seasons before. Absolutely, it's a Big Three.
Hall of Famer.
The one thing I will question here, as you guys have laid it out, I'm with you. It was absolutely a Big Three. I don't understand what the benefit is of trying to reframe this, because I don't think that actually changes how people view LeBron James.
It won't change anything, because people are set. People are set how they feel about LeBron. Ain't no debate going to change anything on how people feel. But I think he's trying to get that whole LeBron started this Big Three narrative out of there, man.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Big Three. Like, no matter how you put it.
No matter how you put it.
Yeah, it was a Big Three.
He just doesn't want to make LeBron mad. He wants to help LeBron. He wants to make him look good.
I don't know that this changes.
I don't know I don't know if LeBron will get mad.
And even then, I don't know that it would be the incentive for doing it on the front end for him. I think he just believes this, which honestly is probably a little bit more sad, because why? Why do you believe this? The one thing I will say is I do, and if you guys are right, I would agree with this point. I think the people always try and put it LeBron, like LeBron did the Big Three, as if we're not looking. We did not look at the, what was that, 2008?
Mm-hmm.
The Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
That was the first Big Three that we saw put together. I think people are just a lot more comfortable with it because it was the general manager and the organization that were the ones that put this together. And I would like people to examine why that is something that they're comfortable with. Oh, it's cool amassing this amount of talent if it originates from that side of this. If it originates from the general managers putting it together, but all of a sudden the players want to play together, and that becomes an issue in assembling the talent. Yeah, right. If you don't like the notion of a Big Three, it should be across the board in that way.
Well, yeah, but I'm just fascinated by just like he's just going to whatever it takes to make LeBron, even though it's not a factor, make him look good, look better. You know?
Yeah, yeah, and like I said, everybody's stuck in their ways, man. Whatever he say, ain't gonna change anything.
No,
but they gonna try. They gonna try to do whatever they can to say, oh no. Nah. To me, it seemed like he's trying to make it seem like LeBron won it the hard way, and which I think it's fair to say. I ain't gonna sit here and say it was easy for him, but I think he's trying to do as much as they can to make it seem like LeBron, this wasn't as easy as we say it was.
Yeah. See, now, if you really wanted, like, the thing that I would say, it wouldn't actually work, but if I was trying to be the person that was spinning this, if I could manage to make it shake, the real thing I would go for is J.J. Barea ain't even that short. Like, J.J. Barea is actually, like, it's an optical illusion. He's actually 6'3".
He's kind of stocky.
He's actually 6'3". Yeah. Because that was the real problem, is that, what was that, 2011? Mm-hmm. That he let J.J. Barea punk him in the finals? That's the real problem when we talk about that Miami stint.
Hey, don't be surprised if they come out of nowhere and be like, hey, you know what? That Dallas Mavericks team was one of the best teams of all time, y'all. I know they don't get enough credit, but that was one of the hardest teams. That was one of the best teams ever.
I mean, it was a tough path to go, but yeah, that'd be a very funny PR spin to put on there. All right, yeah. That is Figgy's Mixtape every weekday, 1:20 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 610 at the Figgy Fig on social media, but not on the back of his Rockets jersey. If you want to get at him, if you find something that you believe to be mixtape worthy. All right. Coming up next, we get ready to hand it off to the fellas of the drive. Clinton, Ron, we'll do it next.
Thank you, Figgy.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Hope your Wednesday is going great. I have a feeling that just listening to this music will make it feel better, because this, when Optimistic comes on by Sounds of Blackness, it makes me happy every single time. Like, my day is instantly better when this song
just
comes
done, automatically.
Yeah, without question. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that you were optimistic about all of your Houston teams, but specifically the Rockets as they go to the playoffs. That we know that it's the Warriors Sunday, 8:30 p.m. for Game 1, and then definitely we're about a week out from NFL draft, where we got a little bit of insight from Nick Caserio at his pre-draft press conference. I'm sure you'll hear some more cuts when the drive takes over here in a little bit. Maybe not the cuts immediately, but you'll definitely hear it during their show as they revisit some things. And thinking about, you know, there was the 40 minutes of conversation that Nick Caserio had with the Assembled Media earlier. One of the things that I was thinking about is, I think he might have changed my mind or my thinking on that I had prior about the way that this Texas team might go about something. Was there anything that changed that you had your mind changed on?
I don't know but if it changed it that much, but it sort of galvanized a couple of thoughts for me.
Okay.
And that would be, you know, obviously the ability, which we already knew. That's why I said it didn't change my mind.
Sure.
But I feel like...
Oh, the ability to move up and
move
or
up
down.
Or back, or altogether, you know, adding trading picks late. You know, the usual things that Nick Caserio does, he's going to do. Like, he's going to do. It's just a matter of, has he identified a player? Is he going to move up, or is he good and maybe move back if he doesn't like the way the board is breaking, or, you know, anything along those lines?
Yeah. So I think that's fair. He made that very clear that he wants to be dangerous. He wanted that appearance of danger, because he mentioned a few times that feeling of that. For me, the thing I was thinking about is the potential of upside. When looking at some players, especially like offensive linemen, but other positions, the thing that I kept honing in on, especially when I was like a sicko and doing multiple, you know, mock drafts in various different places on simulators, I personally put a premium, or maybe that's too high, but I leaned towards, in an instance where it was a tie going to the runner.
Mm-hmm.
In this instance, the tie went to the players with upside. It's one of the reasons why I'm very fond of Josh Connerly, Josh Connerly Jr. Out of Oregon, the tackle.
Right.
Is that's a guy that's only started for 1 year at Oregon, and he came along very quickly, and there's still a lot, draft scouts believe, a lot of upside in his play. There's still a lot of development to be had. Something that Nick Caserio said basically put me towards the place of, maybe they're not as worried or as considering as much, right, the idea of upside. Did you kind of get that impression as well with this, or are you? Do you feel like I'm leaning?
I don't know, because he addressed it and said, you know, that it's kind of a a tricky thing, you know. And so I don't know if that necessarily changed my mind. How did it change yours? Because I think he basically said, hey, that's kind of dangerous to assume, you know, that a guy is going to be able to get a lot better or not.
Right, you know? Right. But I think that just in the way that he acknowledges it makes me wonder if that's not going to be as much or as prominent of a thought process they go through. And I want to acknowledge that.
Okay, I was not
assuming that was something that they would do. But in my perspective, I go, okay, that is an added check mark with any player, right? Mm-hmm. When you talk about, hey, this player's good, you know, does this well, does that well, or what have you. One of the things in my mind that would be a check mark in evaluation is room to develop, to grow into a better player, right? Like, what is the ceiling, the high end of this? It seemed like he is not as concerned about like the high end because, again, as you were mentioning, he basically dictated that as you cannot be certain that that's something that is going to be fulfilled. How do you even assume what the high end is? Which was a little bit of an assertion that I was like, hey, I feel like there's still instances where you absolutely can see that there's opportunity to get better.
Yeah.
But I think that comes back around to it feels like, and I can't say this with certainty, but I feel I've locked more in on the idea that the Texans are probably going to be more inclined to lean on what is a guy who is closer to this finished product, or maybe at least we can hold on to something more tangible when it comes to what their skill is at this point.
Well, and I think that's fair, and I actually agree, but I also feel like we've seen the signs. I think we talked about it a little bit yesterday. We've seen the signs with him in terms of he always drafts power four guys. Those are guys that tend to be sort of a not quote finished product, but close to a finished product. You know what you're going to get. They played the higher level of competition, et cetera. So I think, yeah, it fits with his personality.
Yeah. So, again, I think that really kind of makes me, I don't know if I'm going to fully move off of, but I'm moving a little bit off of the likes of who did I just say? Josh Connerly Jr. And players like that, that I would look at, okay, there's a lot of upside there. Does that add value? And that maybe makes me move back towards players that have done it to a high degree that the Texans might be interested in. Maybe that's one of the ways in which their board is smaller.
And by the way,
what would be the average?
I don't think there's an NFL team around that doesn't at least talk about potential upside of every player that they're looking at.
I mean, it would be negligent not to,
exactly.
Right?
So it's a little bit, yeah, you say that, Nick, and I get where you're going, but don't tell me that you're not having those same conversations. Like, what could he be? Where do you project him is maybe a better way to put it.
Yeah, I think so as well. There are some people giving him a little hell on the YouTube page and
for the
text F-bomb? Line. No, not even for that. It seemed like people were largely cool with him dropping an F-bomb in there. Like, people kind of liked it, especially when you get to the place where Nick Caserio, I think someone going in was like, can we get AI to break down what Nick is saying? Because sometimes when Nick gets up there on that podium, it can be a little, you know, it could be a little, I won't say monotone because that's more about delivery, but it could be a little bit dry word. Of sorts.
Maybe dry.
But a lot of word salad.
That is another way to describe it. Absolutely.
A lot of word salad.
Yeah.
It feels like he's opening up, and maybe that is a level of evidence.
It's about as comfortable as he's been.
He got real passionate enough to drop the F-bomb in there, which was funny. But that also, he hit us with the word touch points now, didn't he?
Oh, man.
He hit us with the touch points.
The magnificent Nick.
Yeah, man.
The magnificent Caserio.
What are the chances that Payne Pendergast tomorrow morning give him his hell? After, because they gave the magnificent Gladstone hell about that touch points and
as
synergy
and
processes and all of the corporate speak that he comes for. I was like, oh man, Nick Caserio ended up in that space where he sounded a little bit like what that magnificent Gladstone.
As soon as he said that, I started texting Sean and Seth like, no. They got Nick. They got Nick.
But not enough that he wouldn't drop that F-bomb.
That's right. I know.